Martin Cohen, one of my mentors and a mentor to Philip O'Reiner, was wont to say that a congregation is a laboratory for theology, which likely explains my passion about the congregational rabbinate, for if I were not a rabbi, I would have liked to be a theologian, which is similar to being a rabbi, but without the salary. And we often make the statement that Judaism is about deeds, not creeds, that we are in many ways a religion without a dogma, or perhaps even a religion without a theology. That's at best partially true. This is the week we read the Shema, Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. God is one or unique, and our God. We think of that as, if anything, the dogma, the creed of our religious faith. And theology, if you've ever been in a class with me, is perhaps my greatest passion of the constellation of Jewish works. You can consider Midrash, Halakha, narrative, history, literature. Our understanding of God and why God is, how God is, why we are here, where we go, is my abiding passion. And if you've ever been in a class with me or even heard a sermon, you might have noticed that one of my quixotic quests is to challenge Maimonides. He would never have cared. He would have viewed me like an ant under his foot, which truly I am. But his understanding of theology is somewhat in opposition to my own. And in commenting on this week's parasha, not directly, especially on the Shema, he has this to say, that the foundation of all foundations and the pillar of all wisdoms is to know that there is a first existence, a primary cause, who brings all existences into being, which is roughly Neoplatonic theology, as I've pointed out, derived in the Greeks and arrived to us through the Arabs. And he says about the Shema that God is one, that Echad means one, but it's not the one you would use commonly. It's not about a quantity. It is that God's unity, says Maimonides, is unlike any other unity in existence. God is not one like one species, which includes many individuals. God is not a collective one, nor is God one as in one body, which includes many parts. God is a unity the likes of which there is no other unity in the world. Which is to say that God, that echad that we use in the Shema, is not a quantitative measure, but a qualitative measure. God is not quantitatively different from other deities or other experiences. God is entirely qualitatively different, totally foreign to our experience, absolutely transcendent to what we know. Again, he wouldn't care, but I disagree. And I also disagree on a much more, what I think is called an epistemological level, on a level of knowledge. Theology is not something God, is not something that is easily reasoned with, but is perhaps more wrestled with. In pedagogy, you say that a lot of things are caught and not taught. That you can attempt to do moral education, or in this day and age, anti-bullying education in a classroom, but what really matters is how the system works, how the teachers, professors, and administrators treat you and each other. And if you have a teacher who berates children in a classroom, my ninth grade English teacher, no matter what he or she may be teaching, bullying is the lesson of the day. And I think that's equally true of theology, that it is largely, perhaps one might say, affective. It's of the heart rather than of the mind. We write down the things we experience in books and in bullet points and in outlines and in logical structures, but we experience God partly through our mind, but also through all of our senses and experiences. And that desire to experience the divine, to know the Almighty at some small level, contra Maimonides, is also at the heart of this week's parasha. Uvikashte misham et Adonai Elohecha umatzata ki tidreshenu. Nu. B'chol levavcha v'chol nafshecha. You asked then for God and you found because you looked. You looked with all your heart and all your spirit. That's the true experience. It's never out of a textbook, but always a part of a lived life and a desire to know and to experience and to understand the profound and the inexplicable and the mystery. And at the end of the day, at the end of our lifetimes, at the end of a human experience, what we want sometimes more than anything is to be touched by the divine. There are moments in our life, for many it's the birth of a child. For me, one of the ones I think back to was being 16 and seeing a rainbow over the Kotel during my last day in Israel that semester. We have a few moments in our life that are transcendent, that are superlative, that blow our minds, and through which we experience blinding gratitude and awareness of something more profound. They're never enough, but they provide signposts. So the Akedat Yitzhak, I think writing about 200 years ago, talks about the vision that Ezekiel had, which we read some months ago during Shavuot, seeing the throne carriers, the enormous, ineffable body of God, the incomprehensible size of God, and finding something he could barely describe. However, says the Akedat Yitzhak, the Israelites descending into the Sea of Reeds could even point to God. Wouldn't that be amazing? They're saying, and that's when they say, Ze Eli ve'anvehu, that's the understanding. When they say in Shirat Hayam, Ze Eli ve'anvehu, this is God whom we praise and bow to. Whenever you see a Ze, the sages understand that to mean they were pointing. That they had a manifest experience of the divine. Would that we could have that. To understand this thing that transcends and surpasses us and yet is within us also at all times. I feel like I'm witnessing right now. I'm going to testify. We don't use those words, but if we're lucky, we also do that thing. Attest to our experience in small and large ways of knowing God, that it's a thing that can't be described or reasoned with. So in chapter 5, verse 4 of Deuteronomy, we read this week, Panim b'fanim, diber Adonai imachem behar mitocha esh. I think that was actually in my reading. That God spoke to us through the fire face to face. And years ago in a sermon, I noticed that you could repoint, re-vocalize, give new vowels to that phrase, and say panim bifnim, the face within. The sense of God's immanence, I-M-M-A-N-E-N-C-E, the sense of God within all things, and the sense of God that is intimate and loving and beloved. Again, a too rare experience, but one that we strive for nonetheless. Reading Paul Tillich, reading Neil Gilman, can be spiritually meaningful, but it can't capture seeing a grasshopper and the golden green of its wing and being mystified as to why music should exist. And although Maimonides and many strains of philosophy would have us understand God as being ultimately not understandable, the truth is God in our tradition, in our Torah, and at least in the early rabbinic tradition, first, let's say, 1,000 years of the Common Era, made God much more relatable. So in this week, we're told that God is El Rahum and God is El Kana, the God who is merciful and compassionate and the God who is passionate. Maimonides, in roughly the first book of the Guide for the Perplexed, tries to re-understand all of the terms and descriptions of God that seem anthropomorphic, that seem humanized, that seem to give God arms and legs and vision and sorrow as being metaphors, as being allegories for what's truly happening in the world, as being human words for what we describe happening through God. The phrase he never explicates is Elkanah, passionate God. Good luck making an allegory of that, is what I've always thought. the idea as contained in Torah and in later rabbinic understanding that God has passion, that God has heart and will and drive and love and fire, is much harder to rationalize. And I think that's the God we want to know. We want to know the God who is imitatio hominis, who is like us, just different, not qualitatively and explicitly unreachable, but similar and just more awesome. We want to have that personal relationship with the Almighty. We want to know that God can be accessed and meaningful and help us in our lives, in our compulsions and obsessions and fears and hopes and dreams and despairs. We want to know that God is there. We want to love God. We want to know God. We want to be intimate with God. So we often think of the Shema and the Ve'ahavta as listen and love, but it also means obey and be faithful. Which, listening and loving is an important thing to do with a spouse and a child and a parent. But a long-term relationship also involves doing for each other and faithfulness. I can't recall where I read this recently. It might have been in David Brooks' new book. The idea that once infatuation is over, what really matters is faithfulness, is being faithful to each other. And I don't just mean not having extramarital affairs, but giving one's heart regularly to the beloved. That's what God wants of us, is to be in rapport and relationship with God. And I'm at one of those points where I'm sort of chuckling at myself inwardly. Well, much easier said than done. I mean, we all know that. Just as I pointed out, one of the last experiences I had of transcendent God, of awesome God, was when I was 16. So it's rare. It's rare. And the only way to hold on to those moments is to cultivate smaller moments. And what I'm really talking about then is gratitude. It's writing every morning, waking up with your coffee and looking out and listening to the birds and thinking, what a wonderful world. And in chapter 4 of this week's parasha, that exact phrase happens. Moses turns to the people and recounts to them what they've gone through and says, in the history of the world, has anything like this ever happened? The ultimate, or one of the many, but an ultimate expression of gratitude and awe and grandeur. In the history of the world, has anything great as has happened as seeing my daughter born? In the history of the world, has anything as great happened as seeing this amazing transformative work of art? In the history of the world, has anything happened as great as publishing my first book? As traveling to Egypt? Whatever those signal moments are, as this coffee that I'm drinking. I think Salanter had this idea that the reason you say Shakol Nied Bidvaro, that the reason you say that blessing over coffee, but for example, for him it was when he was in a cafe, is Shakol, we say God who caused all things to be over coffee. Who cares about coffee? But he says it's because of the birds and the waiter and the heat and the cold and all the things that make that moment. And the gratitude we ought to have for everything in our lives. Everyone has struggle and strife. This is not to minimize distress and trauma. But every life also has joys and graces. And every life also has unearned pleasures. So later in the parsha, as Moses recounts, or sort of pre-recounts to people all the wonderful things that are going to happen in the land, Moses notes them that you're going to take over cities and possess houses and cisterns and fields that you did not earn. You did not plant them, you did not dig them, you did not build them. Every life has unearned majesties and parenthetically unearned griefs. But today, in this parsha, I want to focus on the gratitude. And the gratitude as a way of cultivating that relationship with the Almighty and of storing and holding on to those magical and majestic experiences that are rare. And the sense that this relationship we have with God is hard to access and unending, and sometimes we have fights, sometimes we are angry with God, rightly so. And sometimes we can't talk to God, or God seems silent or even absent or hidden. And it's a relationship that has to be struggled with one's whole life. And in this, you're not alone. Because Moses says something that hints at that this week. He says, God, when I began to see you, and he's talking about now, saying, I'm only just beginning to know you, God. And the Baal Shem Tov, the founder of the Hasidic revivalist movement some 300 years ago, says, wow, Moses was God's faithful servant, the greatest of all prophets, in some verses in Torah understood as almost divine. He received the Torah, yet after 120 years of the most godly life ever known, ever lived, he felt as if he himself were only beginning that relationship. Again, what I'm saying, much easier to say than do, but you must work at it. That's the message of those books, that God is out there and in there, and it's a struggle to know God, and the desire to feel God's love is persistent and pervasive and maddening, but it can be done bit by bit. And that love that you might express towards a beloved, that love that you might wish to give away to God, whether you know it or not, is returned to you. And here's the proof text from the Talmud. This is one of the funniest things in the Talmud. Paradoxical, not really, laugh out loud. So this is the parasha, this is the week when, among others, we hear about the mitzvah of tefillin, the leather phylacteries that we wear on our arm during the weekdays, not on Tisha B'Av. And so there is a concept in probably other religions, but in Talmud Brachot, imitatio Dei is the Latin idea that we imitate, follow God. That just as God clothed the naked, so we too do mitzvot. But there's also a concept that some call imitatio hominis. It might have been first coined by Schechter. One of my rabbis also would say it. That God does what we do. So we learn to put on tefillin in this parsha, and in the Talmud it asks, what are God's tefillin like? Because of course, if we're putting on tefillin, God must be as well. So I wouldn't put the Shema in God's tefillin. That wouldn't make sense for God to be reminded that God is unitary. So what goes in God's tefillin? It's a quote from the book of Samuel. It says, who is like your people Israel, one nation on the earth? Such that every morning, I don't know if God is a lefty or a righty, but I'm a righty, so God wraps God's tefillin, and God is reminded of humankind and how much God ought love us as we love God in return. And as we look to God, God is still looking at us. And sometimes, as was written in a wall in the Warsaw Ghetto, we don't know it, but it is there. And so I invite you this week, as every week, to claw your way imperceptibly to a better knowing and loving and feeling of the Almighty.